Marcus is a connoisseur of anything that's free, so he was happy to read the disclaimer on TurboTax Free Edition.
Roughly 37% of taxpayers qualify. Form 1040 and limited credits only. See how at TurboTax.com. That's me!
File your taxes 100% free with TurboTax Free Edition and get your max refund guaranteed. See if you qualify to file for free at TurboTax.com. See max refund guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
Welcome to the Midlife Male Podcast, a podcast designed to help men maximize middle age and live healthier, wealthier, stronger, and happier. I am Greg Scheinman, and I'm inviting you to join the thousands of men who listen each week, receive my Midlife Male newsletter, and are committed to making this next phase of life our best phase. If you have not yet downloaded my No BS Guide to Maximizing Midlife, where I break down the three principles to maximizing middle age and taking back some of that shit you've given up, head on over to midlifemail.com/No BS Guide. Guys are loving these three principles to maximizing middle age, and you can download your copy today at midlifemail.com/No BS Guide. All right, guys, Greg Scheinman here with you. Another week, another Midlife Male podcast. Thank you so much for joining me right here on the show this week and every week. If you like what you hear, please give us that 5-star rating. Leave us that positive review. It keeps the Midlife Male podcast moving up the charts. Also, head on over to midlifemail.com. You can subscribe to my newsletter there. Each and every Sunday, have it drop in your inbox. You can also download a free copy of my No BS Guide to Maximizing Middle Age. Speaking of maximizing middle age, Todd Abrams joins me on the show today. Todd is the CEO and co-founder at Icon Meals, a company where clean eating is made easy, weekly and custom meals, snacks, and more delivered right to you. Check them out. They are awesome, catering to the competitor in each of us. Todd is also a father, husband, connector, relentlessly pursuing being better every single day. He also has this incredible site, Dad Bod Inc., redefining the dad bod and the business of being a dad. Check that out also. All right, guys, let's get into it. Midlife Male Podcast with Todd Abrams. Todd, thank you for being here, man.
Awesome. It's great to be on, Greg, and I appreciate the intro and appreciate you inviting me on.
This is a lot of fun for me. Hopefully, this is going to be a lot of fun for you because
it will
be. Yeah, I see you. I came across your profile on Instagram. I think we have a few mutual friends in common. We talked even before we kind of hit the record button, which is some of my favorite stuff. And I took a look at you and you know, did one of the stalker check throughs. You know, you're looking at all the pictures, looking at all the stories, going, okay, this guy is training. This guy is eating. This guy's got a meal company. This guy's hanging and banging with some pretty heavy hitter midlife males that are out there. I'm like, and this is inspiring. This is motivating. Husband, father, you know, faith, finance. You've got your F's, you know, as well in there. And I appreciate you being so transparent and vulnerable and authentic with everything you put out there. So I had to invite you on. And the first question I got to ask, and maybe this is, you know, this is a big one, but how do you do it all? You know, the question I get asked a lot is like, hey man, how do you do it all?
I think for me, it's people always say, hey, you got to balance the stuff. And I say balance, at least to me, it's I learned a long time ago, that's a bunch of BS, right? Because for me, it's, I think, about prioritizing and really looking at what's important to you. Because again, there's only, as everyone knows, 24 hours in the day, but it's how you utilize those 24 hours. And I think one of the big things for me has always been, I learned a long time ago, it's like, I guess one of my worst things and one of the things I've had to overcome is really procrastination. Because so many people, I think there's two things. Procrastination, I'll call it taking risks, right? And just a quick backstory, I don't know, I've never really worked for anyone. So I've always had my own startup. And I think, so for my definition, risks a little bit crazy because, like, even going back to, I'll call it working in college, I was like, I grew up in a small town, right? And little farm town, and then Honda, this big factory came in, and that was like the big thing, right? And there's all these guys with college degrees and PhDs and everything working in Honda. And my dad's like, oh, you got to work at Honda. And I'm like, okay, whatever. So I go take these interviews, and it was like $20 an hour back then while I was at school during the summer, and come back. I lasted 2 weeks, okay? Because I'm not the guy that they bring you in, they do the training, they put you in this white jumpsuit, and then you got to walk between these yellow lines and you do four jobs a day. And like, my mind doesn't go like that, right? I'm all over the page, okay? So I'm thinking like these things, and I told my dad, like, I quit. And he's like, oh my gosh, what are you doing? Like, you're ruining your life. You're never going to be to come back. And I'm like, what did I do? I went, did network marketing, zero base salary, 90 to 100 hours plus a week, right? Knocking on doors. And I think, wow, crazy knocking on these doors in ghetto neighborhoods now, way back in the day. But again, that's me. I'm wired differently, right? I look at risk really because I don't know. It's a little bit differently. Like, I don't know, all the things that I have going on. So my family and things, I think I've matured as well. And this might probably fit your audience. Like when I first started in business, I was probably chasing a lot of the things your listeners are chasing, right? They're chasing, hey, the material things. I was chasing money. I was chasing cars. I was chasing all the things, my watch collection, things that I thought were important to me, even though I had like small kids growing up, right? And we talked about this earlier, but I have a 21, I have an 18, and I have a 6-year-old, okay? So it's almost like God said, hey, you're not done. Put this back in my life and said, hey, it's not a reset. And look, I don't, I have no regrets, right? But my mind and I guess my maturity and everything, how I look at life has changed. Over those days, it was all about the money. Hey, I thought I had to work harder, work harder, work harder. And I know I put some of those things, which I wish I had back in a way, right? With my kids on the 21 and the 18. And now it's like all about life experiences, about creating memories. It's about doing those things and really understanding, hey, how I am present in every situation that I'm in during that day. So if it's with my kid, my wife, my business, I'm 100% present in there. So for me, like my schedule is a little bit messed up. Like I'm traveling right now and I still wake up. Like every morning I wake up at 3:00. I don't care if I set my alarm for 4:00, set it for 5:00. It's going to be 3:00 or 2:53. And that's how I've been from a long time. People are like, oh, you don't sleep. I'm like, I don't know. Like for me, my routine is I come home, try to be home by, I'll call it 7:38, put my little guy to bed. Those are probably my best hours, right? We read, we do Bible stories, we say prayers, and then I fall asleep with him. And typically the joke is like, I'll come to bed at 11:00 or whatever when I wake up. But those are probably the hardest few hours I get of that REM deep sleep, right? And then it doesn't matter. My wife hates it because we go to the islands. I have to find somewhere that has a 24-hour gym because I'm going to wake up at 3 or 4 o'clock and then I'll come back to bed. But that's just how I'm wired. And people say, hey, isn't that a little selfish and stuff? But to me, it's about prioritizing my different pieces so that I can be at my best and provide the most value to other people. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and that's looking at, I get my work it in. So I have a routine. I wake up, I have scripture time. I have like journaling time. I do different things, right? A typical routine. Okay. For me, puts me in a place. Then have my coffee then, and I'm in the gym. So typically if I'm not somewhere like I am right now in the middle of nowhere, I'm in the gym by 3:30 or my garage gym. Okay. Knocking that out for an hour. I'm not the guy that wants to spend 2 hours. We can talk about that later when I'm with Michael Hearn. It's like almost craziness for me because I can't handle a two and a half hour workout. My mind is quick, right? We're gonna do drop sets, super sets. We're gonna even whatever the weight is, but I'm 45 minutes an hour out of there. Okay. From that standpoint, after that, then I can, hey, typically I'm gonna come back. I'm gonna eat breakfast with my little guy, get him ready and take him to school, right? So from that standpoint, that's how I prioritize. But again, if I don't get my first piece in the day, I don't feel like I can be the best version of me to the other people, to my employees, right? And it's funny because after 2 days, you're probably the same. My wife's going to be like, if I haven't worked out, she's like, get in the gym because it's like, for me, it's my stress relief, right? That's my reset, my mental sort of check and let's go. Take whatever it is out on weights. I try to stay off my phone in the morning, et cetera, just so I don't get distracted because we talked about it as well. I have that shiny object syndrome, right? If I get into text or something's going to set me off ahead of time. But again, that's it. And then we go and we deal with different things from there.
I love it. As you're kind of rolling through it, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. I identify with it all in there. Now I'm not as early a riser as you are, but conceptually, you know, also the notion that self-care, you know, isn't selfish. It's one of the most selfless things that you can possibly do. How you get up, how you set your intention, how you go through your routine, prepare, become the best version of yourself so that you can give so much of yourself to everybody else out there. I also love I'm the same way. Also, like the get, I posted the other day something about my calendar, and like there's somewhere in it, and it said like it was like 8 a.m. get back in bed, you know. Yeah. And I got a bunch of actual messages, and there's some like, what do you mean by like get back in bed? I'm like, well, there's two sides to that. One, like let me explain to you like what it's like. We have an 18 and a 15 year old. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like our quality husband and wife time is you got a 6 year old is kind of gone. Like they stay up late. Their room is on top of our room. So like there've been some number of schedule changes, but for me again, to be able to get up, kind of caffeinate, hydrate as I need in the morning, get a workout in, shower, like hit the cold plunge, everything, and then get back into bed and have like a 2 hour window because these kids sleep like logs, you know, get back into bed and have actual quality time, all of those things. And then be able to start the day. And I think sometimes what gets lost is really this notion of controlling the calendar in a way too, you know, not letting your calendar control you. Like what you just put out, you prefer 45 minutes to an hour, and it's not 3-4 hours a day in the gym to be built in a way like you are. It's quite frankly, it's years of a body of work of 45 minutes to an hour a day. It's consistency in a way.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing is what you said is consistency, right? And I think a lot of people, they start on a routine, but they get off course because it's not doing this or that for them instantaneously. And that's the biggest thing that people always ask me, hey, what do you take? What do you do this? I'm like, look, I'm an open book. It's food. Like we'll talk about Icon after, but literally for me, I'm food and I'm consistency, right? They don't see 20 plus years. Like they don't see me being the fat kid unless I post something right from way back. Right. They mm-hmm. don't see the mindset changes, because I think a big part of it isn't just it's physical. It's a lot more mindset, but it's also learning. Right. And like, for me, I don't know if you are, but I'm a big book guy, right? Like big intake. And then it's not just intake. It's how do you apply it and take action? Because I see lots of people intake. And then they post, oh, I do this and that, but there's no action, right? What's the actionable result from everything in life? So
I love that. Yeah, I call it aggregate, curate, eliminate. You know, one of my, is, you know, take it, aggregate it all in, even, you know, 200 episodes of the podcast now, that has been my MBA. Take it all in from the best and brightest out there, curate it down, you know, to what really works and is the most impactful for you and that you can implement, and then eliminate everything that doesn't so that you can go execute. Otherwise, you can literally say, you can keep learning, you can keep listening, keep hearing, but you never get around to the doing part.
Yeah. I think that's a concept as well. Like a lot of people always tell me, they say, hey, like, okay, I'm going to do this, or I'm going to do that when it's perfect time, right? Or when I'm ready, or when I have more money, or when I get, hey, when I hit 100,000 in online revenue, or when I don't know, when I have a trading account of this or whatever it is, right? But I don't know, I have a phrase that I've always used for a long time. And I say, look, better is perfect. Okay. And to me, it's work on being that 1% better in every area of your life on a daily basis. And because perfect's like this fallacy, right? It's never going to happen. But if you work on being better every single day in each element of your life or whatever your goals are, then you will get towards that striving for perfection. I think you need to celebrate those small wins along the way, which like, because a lot of people I see just, hey, that's this one thing, right? But it's you got to celebrate and reward in little increments along the way.
Totally agree. And that's the stuff that I gravitate towards, which is again the preparation, the consistency, the accountability, the daily little wins. Like what are the little positive action steps that we can take each day that stack up, you know, in there, and then they equal those bigger things. And to your point, and it's so good and it's so true, like just start. There is no perfect time.
Yeah,
one of my earlier investors in one of my other deals, like, perfect is the enemy of good. Like, we got to just go right now. If you want to grow or scale, and yeah, we'll fall on our face, but so what? We'll get up, we'll learn from it, we'll go. But this paralysis by analysis, this fear is, it's crippling, it's paralyzing.
Well, that's the other big thing I think for me that's like, when people say all the time, oh man, you took this risk, you did that. I don't look at my life as risk, right? I've had three startups. It's funny because I had Layer Tech before this, and Layer Tech we had for 14 years. And it was, we were one of the first early pioneers in cloud computing space. So we were the first guys ever that hosted WordPress. Okay. So Barry and Matt are good friends. Like I remember Matt was still working at CNET when he had two servers with us. And then when we sold in 2014, I don't know, 67% of the internet was crossing our backbone. But from that standpoint, it's all about like, when I sold that and I told my wife, hey, I'm going to start this food business. She's like, what the heck? Why can't you just go get a normal friggin' 9-to-5? But she knows I wouldn't be happy with that, right? For me, like, I think after building that company up for 14 years, we went and I told her, hey, we've been comfortable. Like, this house that you've been in for 10 and a half years, like, we're selling this. And I moved all the family into a condo, a three-bedroom condo for a year. Took that money and started Icon. But she knew, like, that, hey, she trusts me, right? She's been with me for so long, moved all over the place, et cetera. And again, it's risk, but I don't look at risk because I'm always going to bet on me, right? I'm like, people say, hey, what do you do? It's like, whatever it takes. I just know that I'm not going to fail. It's not an option, right? So whether it's been, hey, you don't have money for payroll this week, you don't have this, you don't have that, whatever it is, it's just, it's not an option, right? So from that standpoint, every time risk, I look at it as a lot differently, because it's, to me, it's a calculated risk. If I'm going to bet on anything, I'm not a gambler and stuff, but if I'm going to bet on anything, I'm going to put all my money on me, right? And I think the odds are stacked in my favor. So
What, talk to me a little bit about that mindset, that entrepreneurial mindset. And we'll get into, you know, one, not everybody is built for that. But, you know, you talk about earlier the chasing of the things, you know, the material, the things and everything. And now you come full circle and you're like, you know what? We're going to sell some of the things. We're going to move into this condo. Okay. Yep. And I'm going to go bet on myself and I'm going to invest in this. When did that kind of shift occur? Because again, these are forward facing moves. Like, it takes balls, quite frankly, you know, to stop wearing the Rolex, you know, to show publicly.
Well, I think it's,
I think
it's partially our world and like partially social media and stuff, right? Because young kids and stuff, like, we always see, and me, when I started my first business, I was 20 years old, 21, right? And again, it was, I think, all the flashy objects. I just know, hey, if you work for yourself, you're supposed to, it's supposed to equal quick success and supposed to equal money. And this Rolex, and when you're in the club and you have the BMW or the Vets or whatever it was back then, right? That's like the status sign. And I think it's all bullshit a lot of the time, right? I know a lot of guys that are real, real wealthy, uber wealthy, got a couple of billionaire friends, and they're the guys that are just, they're pouring so much money into other people, right? And in value and philanthropy and things like that. And I think that's really a defining quality in life. But from a mindset shift, I think it goes back to, like, my wife said that, because when we started the first company and I had, at 20 years old, we just found out we were pregnant with our first one. I had all this credit card debt. I was living in a $100,000 house. I thought, holy crap, this $600 a month payment was crazy. And fast forward then 15 years, and we find out we were supposed to go skiing, and we found out that we were having another kid after, and that's 15 years, 11 years difference, right? And I'm telling her, after I just sold this company, that I'm starting another company, she's like, what the heck? This is like deja vu, 15, like 11 years difference. So, but again, the mindset, I wouldn't say it goes full circle, because I told you, like, even from day one, the risk, I believe, is on me. I'm just wired differently. And I think many people are wired differently as well. And I think when you said not everyone's wired to be an entrepreneur, I agree, but I think there's a lot of people that want to be an entrepreneur that are actually better suited for being an intrapreneur. Okay. And I'll call it an intrapreneur within their business. I say a lot of people, I think, want to play business. And I say that not to insult anyone, but I think a lot of people want to play business because they like the one side of it, but they don't like the other side of it. Right. And again, it's not necessarily saying that I have to like the other side of it, but it's, I hear a lot of people say, hey, fake it till they make it. I think that's bullshit as well, because it's not, right? Like, it's, you got to go through these different, I'll call it life cycles or evolutions and stuff as you grow as a person, because you're only going to ever, I don't know if you read a bunch of John Maxwell, but he talks about law of the lid, right? And law of the lid, I think a lot of people are hitting that lid and they never open that lid up. They don't put the people in place because, hey, this COO or this CFO that I need, or this director of whatever, right? Or this janitor, it's costing too much money, or they're going to have, I'm going to have to pay them more than me. And it's like a mindset shift, right? But that's the limiting beliefs that they have on themselves. So I tell people all the time, if you can't believe in yourself and you don't have confidence in yourself, go find a mentor, go find someone who believes in you more than you can believe in yourself, right? And that's what you need. And I have a lot of people that say, oh man, you spend all this money on mentors and masterminds and stuff, but I never want to, and I learned early on, I never want to be the smartest person in the room. I never want to have the most money. I would never want to have the biggest network, right? And I think that's what I learned. I had a partner, his name was Bob Neon. He passed away back in 2017. He was a billionaire. He owned the largest real estate investment trust in Canada. And he was like my second dad, like the Richard Kiyosaki sort of deal, right? He was the guy that had a grade 9 education, almost bankrupt twice, but was worth $2.6 billion. He lived in Nassau off in Bahamas, a bunch of different businesses. But I learned so much from him just based on the mindset, on believing in yourself, and also then building your network, I think, has been one of my key successes over life. And that took me learning. But even like my goal, I have, when everyone sets these resolutions and stuff, every year I always have something where I always want to put myself in a situation where I have to, on a weekly basis, I want to introduce myself in get into someone's network, three additional people that I wouldn't be in outside of my comfort zone to expand, right? And again, not because, hey, I want, what can they do for me, but what value can I add? And I think that's been one of my things where, again, just working on myself, it's like putting yourself in uncomfortable situations. I hated talking, right? When I started, what did I do? I went network marketing, started like in my worst comfort zone. I hated standing on a stage. I hated knocking on doors. I hated doing all these things. But again, that's way back when I was 17, 18, I started really like the Tony Robbins, the personal development, way back the DVDs, the cassettes and stuff. Right. But again, I love that crap. And I won't say crap, but again, you have to work on yourself to build the version of you that's not today, right? It's like that version. It's almost like building your vision of the company and building your business plan. It's always going to be ever changing and evolving. But what's that vision and how do you fit in that vision? Because if you're going to have any business, whether you're an entrepreneur or not, you have to sell a vision, right? Again, mm-hmm. If you don't have a vision, you can't have other people fit in or follow that vision. So again, I think that it's just key working on you and that entrepreneur. You can make a ton of money being an entrepreneur, but be the best damn entrepreneur you can working for someone else. And again, it's still, you have to work on you. You have to do all those things, but it's just, it has a lot less risk. You can go home at night, not having a couple million dollars in debt and other stuff. Right. So
it's a great point. Again, I think it's overlooked. I think it's gotten very sexy to be an entrepreneur, you know, to become a buzz, yeah. Quit your job, follow your passion. Everybody's got to be an entrepreneur. I think your point is valid. I think when you talk about risk, and I spent many years in risk, insurance, risk okay. management, yeah. What we're talking about is, how do we mitigate risk here? Which risks do we want to take? How do we calculate those risks? How do we put a price on them, basically? How much do you have to pay in so that I'm comfortable paying out, basically? Yeah. You know,
I think, though, if you don't have the calculated risk and you don't take risks, you're never going to get what you want in life, right? Because I think that the biggest wins that I've ever had are on overcoming fear, right? And a lot of people say, hey, I come up and I don't know if you know Ryan Stuman, Hardcore Closure. He's a good friend. He introduced me a long time ago to The Force of Average. And I still remember the first time I ever heard him speak. It was in, we were both speaking at the same event, and it was in Montana. And he talked about the force of average. And ever since that day, that force of average kicks me in the nuts every day, right? And it's, but again, I know that a lot of people say, hey, there's this wall put in front of me. And Ryan taught me a long time ago, it's not about like, how do you break through the wall? Put a damn ladder up over and climb over the wall. So many people come up against that wall and they're like, okay, well, what brick do I need to take out? How am I going to get a big enough hammer to go through the wall? Oh, I need to make a door. No, put the damn ladder up or get a piece of rope and climb over the damn wall, right? And that's what so many people get hooked up on, I think, in life, on that risk, because it's, oh, this is going to happen or that. You never know until you know, right? But when you're betting on yourself, it always, to me, is that calculated risk. So.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've been in a number of different industries, and you talked about making that giant leap and coming home and telling your wife, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go to the food business and stuff now.
Yep.
How do you make that determination between kind of personal passion, professional expertise, combining the two, you know, the things that you love? Like, again, we've talked, yep. I love health and fitness and nutrition. A lot of these, not all my hobbies or my passions should become businesses. You said, or right. surrounding yourself yep. with other people. What's your decision-making process?
So I think, like, in the technology space, I love the technology space. My first company, I grew up in a weird industry. My dad owns funeral homes and cemeteries. I grew up in that space, but I grew up way back starting a technology company when people said, you're crazy, you're stupid. All these funeral directors like still drive 45 minutes to 2 hours to drop off obituaries. No one has email. No one has websites. No one has B2B anything. Well, I looked at that. I think there's always two things that I have to look at when I evaluate a business, right? Whether you're an entrepreneur, whatever. You got to always have two things. You got to have a solution to a problem. And you have to have, in all the businesses I've had, you have to have recurring or residual revenue. Okay. That's my two points. And all my other businesses, software application development, servers, cloud computing, security, were all residual businesses. And we were solving a problem, right? And in the funeral industry, like, that big thing taken that way back was a huge win for me, because we provided all the solutions, websites, email. We were the first guys to ever write software for funeral home planning, right? So they're still using it today. My dad's funeral home and a bunch of other funeral homes. We were the first guys to ever do memorial cast. So if you couldn't be at a funeral, and I don't know, you were in Australia, but your mom and family were in Canada, let's say, you could still participate because it was breaking the travel barriers, etc. So again, in food, I look at that as one, my solution to a problem is we're providing the element of convenience. Every single person today is a busy person, right? And we want to allow you to focus on your, I'll call it sort of zone of genius, if you want to say what's important to you. Allow us to be that trusted partner to provide you, and we'll talk about that, the sort of the healthy eating side of it, right? That's important for you to do everything else. And then the second thing is I look at food as residual recurring revenue. Every single person eats. So if they're not buying off us, they're buying off somewhere else, right? If it's a good, bad decision, whatever it is. But the average consumer is going to eat 1 to 3 times a day. And it's not like a product that they buy once a month. And it's not, I'll call it dispensable income, right? You have to eat. So there has to be an allocation of funds put out. And if I can provide more value on that transfer than they're getting back, then, so that's how I really evaluate this business. And again, I won't say lucky, but it's, yeah, it is a passion to me, but it's also not a quick decision. We talked about previously off camera, it's been a 20-year decision. So Icon's probably, whatever the name was or whatever that vision was, is 20 years old because I was that fat kid, right? And as I learned, as I grew, as I evolved in different things and saw how my life changed, I then wanted to, I saw a much bigger, as everyone I think sees out there, obesity, all this other stuff, right? All these different diseases. A lot of those things are caused by what we put in our body. And I was like, if I can change my life and it's me, and I know like it's the mindset and then it's what I'm putting in. And like, we'll talk about like on the blood panel, understanding what's going on within your body, then every single person is capable of having that element of change. And I want to provide that, right? We saw different companies out there and stuff, and I didn't really like what some others were doing. So, hey, and I think here's one key point. A lot of people say, hey, I'm going to be an entrepreneur, but man, I need to find the next this. I need to find the next that, right? You don't necessarily have to be the smartest. You don't have to go create some life-changing thing. I just thought I could do food better than other people and I wanted to do it a different way, right? So if there's other people that are doing something that you're doing, it doesn't mean you can't play in that space. But again, put your own spin on it. Do what you need to do to make it fit that vertical. And if it has that solution and checks these boxes, then so be it. But that's what I see a lot of people. Oh, I'm going to do this and that. You don't need to revolutionize everything. But
it's so true that there really is room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's tons of room. So that goes back to abundant mentality and prosperous thinking, right? Because so many people don't think abundantly out there. They don't see it out there. Money's everywhere, right? It's how your thoughts and different things that you put out there like really come into play. And Andy, I don't know if you know Andy Frisella, but Andy Frisella's podcast, he talked about today or yesterday, I forget. One of the elements he talked about were me, like let's say, for instance, you're very successful and you're telling me, hey, you had this big win. And I'm going, yeah, Greg, that's awesome. But really in my heart, I'm thinking, what the fuck? Like, this is like, I'm happy for you, but I'm really not happy for you, right? Mm-hmm. And he's like, you got to get that intentionality out of you because that's just the law of attraction telling you, like the force of whatever you want to call it, okay? God, whatever. He doesn't know nothing or they don't, like it doesn't differentiate, right? It just knows that it's a signal in you that you're not happy for you. I'm not happy for you truly, right? So there's intention, bad intention out there. So it's telling the world that, hey, I'm not going to get money in because I can't fit that. And I think that's one of the key things is that intentionality is that being happy, helping other people, different things, because some people don't have that abundant mentality. They think if someone else has it, then there's no room for anyone else. There's no more money. There's no more this.
Yep. The comparison, the envy, kind of the assumptions and judgments that are made, all of those things that you have to set aside. And, you know, admittedly so, guilty of for a long period of time, even myself. You're in very competitive industries. We're keeping score in a way. Only so many people get to go on the trip. What, like, you know, all these things that are done, you know, that are out there. Only so many people get to walk by the boardroom and get invited in, you know, to have it because you've made it and you're doing it. When you again shift that mindset into one of more growth and abundance, that what I've seen, and you were mentioned doing speaking and these other guys, and I've gotten involved in working with some amazing speakers right now and launching the speaking part of my business. And as I said, even as it pertains to coaching and launching the coaching practice. So working closely with so many prolific, amazing coaches, so many prolific, amazing speakers, you know, what it's also opened my eyes up to is exactly what you're talking about. There's room for all of us, like be happy for everyone. You need 10 clients at a certain rate to have a successful coaching practice. Yeah. You know, the guy that spoke at the stage for that company last week, he's not coming back next year. They're going to book somebody else. You know, there's room for everybody. Help each other get where you want to go. And you're right. When you start thinking like that, you start operating like that, it comes back. It really does come back to you tenfold without thinking.
Yeah, I think the other thing is like, of your business, what you do. And it's really, you're mentoring other people, right? And I think for a lot of people that, like, they don't want to spend the money on mentors or coaches or this and that. I got tons of coaches, right? I spend hunderds of thousands of dollars a year on coaches, masterminds, different things. And I think for me, it's all about time collapsing, right? I want, like, if someone's more successful than me, I love sitting some, I don't know, sitting in an airport or sitting outside on South Beach, right, in Miami on a boardwalk or whatever, and watching successful people. I want to, like, I'm always like, hey, what does this guy do? Or what does this girl do? And then I want to know how they do it, right? So I think, like, for me, I love the the biographies and different things, because I want to know what made them successful. And if they're successful, I can be successful, right? Bingo. So again, the coaches in all different areas of my life, like I have a business coach, I have like at fitness, lots of fitness coaches, different people, right? And then from that, you take that and you take the different pieces and then you create this, I'll call it unique version of you, right? What works for you. You learn what works from you, but you take feedback. I think the dumbest thing out there is going, all these people, we talked about this before as well, and they want one person's opinion, but they don't like your opinion. So guess what? They're going to come to me and get my opinion, right? Or they're going to pay me for coaching because they didn't think you did a good enough job because they don't like what you heard. I like, that's the dumbest thing, right? You got to find the mentor or a mentor or mentors or coaches, and then take that and build upon it, because that's what mentors do. They allow you to time collapse different things in business, in life. I don't know, from being a dad, right? Just different experiences, different expertise. And that's been one of the most successful things for that I found that have helped me mature and grow.
It's so good too, as opposed to being kind of that lone wolf or the guy that thinks he's got to push the boulder uphill all by himself. I was talking about this earlier. I got all the answers, or I'm only going to this guy for whatever. When you, again, go to people that know more, and talked about 200 episodes of the podcast being an MBA. We've talked about the F's here. And again, you have yours. I have somebody in fitness. I have somebody in finance. I've got somebody in food and nutrition. You get into the how, like, how do you learn this? You learn this from people that know more than you. You learn this from people that are ahead. And like, you know, I look at guys, go, wait a minute, how come he seems so relaxed? And he always seems to have time for stuff. So let me see what's behind that curtain. How are they operating? Again, how are they time blocking? What are they doing? How much can I learn and then ultimately apply? I think it's making that investment in yourself. You've talked about this a lot. Be willing to make that investment in yourself
Yeah, I think the other big thing for me has been learning, and it's been a hardest thing. I think one of the hardest things is to learn to say no to different things, right? Because I'm not a people pleaser, but I like to try to do as much as I can. And I think a lot of the time, and you probably have this in your coaching business and stuff, but a lot of people want, I call it, there's a lot of takers out there, and I'm not dissing on takers, right? Because a lot of people just want information. That's great. But I think I give a lot of the time, and that's what I want to do. But at some point, it doesn't serve me for my, I'll call it, priorities and time, right? There's only so much time. And I think that's the biggest thing that I've had to say no to certain situations that don't, not necessarily, I won't say serve me, but serve what my sort of vision and what my goal is and where I want to be headed. And once I learned to say no to some different opportunities and stuff, then I think that's helped me stay on course a little bit more.
The Midlife Male podcast would not be possible without the support of some incredible brand partners. I only recommend brands I use, believe in, and trust. And each brand was handpicked by me for a specific reason. I believe in these guys, not just because they're great companies with great people behind them, but because the stuff works. I use these to stay at my peak, and I suggest you do too. So go over to midlifemail.com and click on special offers for exclusive Midlife Male discounts and promotions.
Let me ask you that specifically in touch, because one, I love the notion of saying no. Learning to say no politely is a topic I cover, because again, only so much time. How do we stay focused on the goals? What are your goals? What are you staying focused on?
Yeah, for me, it's, I think, a few things, right? It's one, I have certain goals in all my F's, I'll call it, right? My faith, okay, my family, fitness goals for me are more on the journey. It's not necessarily, hey, stepping on a stage anymore and stuff. I love the journey. I love pushing myself. So my goal is like, for, it's more on fitness. I'll call it, it's biohacking, right? Myself now. So more longer fasts, different things, different, I'll call it, I don't know, be the guinea pig, not necessarily I'm calling it like compound stuff, but just in regards to how I can maximize different things. A lot of that comes from like the blood panels and different things I do, right? On the faith, it's growing, I think, and, a lot more into scripture. And I think, even though, like, talking about, I've been a Christian a long time and stuff. And, but again, really over the past, I don't know, decade or whatever, right? It's really understanding and bringing more scripture into my life and more different I'll call it servant mentality, is really in sharing the word and stuff as such. Family for me, it's just growing on a daily basis. How can I be a better father? How I can be a better husband, right? How can I have more? The one thing that I don't care how much money you have, billions, millions, whatever, thousands, it's you can't get back time. And I've learned that. Like, I've had quite a few close friends, people that are dear to me, right? It's just, they're gone way too soon. And that's one thing that's real important for me. It's like, I think, if anything, the one thing that I'm not scared of, but it's the one thing that I just think, hey, man, this could be like, it's tomorrow, right? Then you never know. And especially over the past couple of years, there's been just some crazy things that it's way too early. So again, how can I be that better? But again, making sure that every time with my family, my main goal is experiences, memories. My kids aren't going to, sure, they're going to remember how much, whatever they, like lifestyle they built off, right? But it's also, it's, what are those memories? What are those things that we used to do together, right? Where did we go? How did we do this and that? So, and then on the finance thing, again, the finance thing to me is really, money is just, it's an object that allows me to be able to do more things to add more value to other people's lives. Okay. And so me, it's not, hey, a multiplier stick or anything, but it's a tool. And I think once you understand that, and again, that goes back to me, at least abundant thinking and stuff, there's more money than anyone ever needs out there. And we're all capable of getting it, but it's the mindset that blocks us a lot of the time, because people go, well, I can't, or it's the how or whatever. Right. But again, once you understand, and to me, my whole life, I think after the, I'll call it the early years of the material thing, is how do I build a business? How do I build a life that provides more value to as many people? How many people can I make an impact on? Because once you impact people's lives and you add more value than you can ever think of getting back, you're more than blessed and more than taken care of. Okay. So for me, that's sort of my goals. And again, building the company is about, I support 100 people, like their families and things. So I always think about that, right? It's like when I take a risk, it's not necessarily just Todd, hey, can Todd capitalize and can we make more money? It's, I've got 100 people and they're depending on me and stuff, right? So it's those calculated risks. And I think I've done pretty well over the few years, not just monetarily wise, but from a standpoint of like my first 2-3 companies, I had people that were with me for 17 years. So when we sold the last one, a lot of those people got well taken care of in their different places. But again, it's about building that culture and stuff. It's, I have a lot of, I think, key values and stuff, like my integrity, doing things at a certain level, a certain way. Those are important to us, right? How we build a business, how I build my life. And I think loyalty, trust, a lot of those are key elements of my circle. Maybe my circle is not huge, but the people that are in my circle, I know I can count on, and they know that they can count on me. And I think those are valuable things that are important to me and my family.
Mm, really, really great stuff. 21, 18, and 6. You said the ages of your kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With family being the first app that you outlined that you've come back to. If you, different approach to fatherhood now?
Yeah,
you, huge. Your wife came home and said, you know, we're doing this all again, the business thing, the kid thing, like here it is 15 years later.
Yeah, so like I said, the first one, so my I guess he just turned 22. So he grew up playing hockey like big time. The highest level, played in the Stars organization, was drafted, played in North American Hockey League for 4 years up in a couple different places. He's up in South Dakota for the past couple of years, and then he moved up to Elmira, New York. So he's playing for school right now. But we were on the road a lot, right? He was away a lot. He was at boarding schools and different things. And I think I would have had a totally different approach. I won't say we got lucky with that. He could have turned it a lot different. He had his best friend's dad was a billionaire. And so that kid's been on more private jets and more things, like a kid's flown all over the world on. So it was good for us going to different schools in hockey, because he had the guys at the private airport knew him more than anything else. Just so again, but he could have turned out a lot differently, right? Cause his best friend was getting a $30,000 allowance when the kid was like 10 and 15 years old. It's crazy. But yeah. And for me, it was like trying to keep those values in both my kids, right? My first two, in regards to, we grew up going to church. It wasn't just going to church. Hey, you're not like church family on Christmas and New Year's and stuff, right? It's really those are ingrained values in them, and trying to, hopefully, I think it's all parents, right? Looking at what values can we instill in our kids to be the best human beings they can grow up to be. And I'm very proud of both those guys. I think also one of the key things is hard work. So they grew up seeing me work hard, but they also grew up seeing me in the gym, like a lot of the time. It's funny because with my little guy now, sure, we talked about differences and like the memories and more like travel time and different things. Before I thought, hey, we can never leave the business. But now it's like, oh, I want to go, right? Memories, memories, memories. And I think the biggest thing with my little guy, I see, is he's seen me ever since he was born work out hard, like train hard, like in good shape. And he wants to come in the garage and he hits the 100-pound heavy bag. And he wants to, like, if you look at my Instagram's like, it's funny because I got my Instagram hacked and I just got it back by Instagram. And I'm like, what do you want my account for? Like, I've got family, I've got fitness, I've got food, and I've got, like, that's pretty much it. I'm a boring guy, right? And, but again, those are all my key, I'll call it keepsakes, my treasures, right? But it's seeing that parlay in him. So again, I think there's certain things as well in fatherhood where we always had rules. If you start hockey or you start, I don't know, dance, or you start this, you're not going to quit. If you make that commitment, it's been that day one that you got to follow it through, right? So, and that's been in pretty standard. So I think working on them, seeing the mindset, and then seeing them evolve into their own different sports and stuff, I'm very proud of them, just because I know that comes from our work ethic and different things transposing in there. So I don't know, encourage also always entrepreneurism. It's funny, my little guy tells people now that he wants to be rich. And I'm like, my wife's like, no, don't say. I'm like, let him say that. Like, I love that because he's outwardly expressing it. He's the guy that wants to be able to help other people and do different things. And I don't know, I'm not the parent that wants to quash that. And I want my kids to have money and have work hard for achieving different things. Right. So.
Love it. You talked about your inner circle a little bit. So maybe it's not big, you know, but it's, and entrepreneurship in a lot of ways is a lonely space, can be a very lonely space. Yep. How did you curate, or how did you cultivate your inner circle? Kind of who's in it? Are these guys that are close by you geographically, or are there guys, again, where you pop into California and it's like, hey, I see them every couple of months so I can focus on my business. And then we go and we meet up somewhere else. You know, I really, this area I'm very interested in, because I think it's hard for guys, you know, 40s, 50s, work, family life, friendships. Maybe they don't live where they grew up or where anybody else is. We've learned during COVID, you know, home field advantage is kind of gone, you know, the screen. So like, what is your inner circle kind of look like? What type of relationships do you look for? And then how much almost time is involved in that? Cause you've touched on time a few times.
I think for me, it's like, I won't say I really have any, I have probably two friends from when I grew up. Right. And that's about it. The others are sort of, those are the lumpy days from before and stuff. And again, great people and stuff, but just not, we don't share the same mindset, right? Even with, I'll call my brother and stuff, we're totally two different creatures. And again, it is what it is, but I want to, I don't know, help a lot of people a lot of times. And it's like, I got to the point there with family where I can't rip my head off and put it on his body, right? So it's like, it's just, we go our own ways. From geographic, I probably, my best friends are spread it all over. And it's, I don't think it necessarily means you have to be closeness, but there's always that I think the people that I have in my inner circle, we have the same occult characteristics, right? One is the big, like, sort of the integrity, the loyalty, the trust, the just the amount of value that we pour into different people. And my circle, I think all of us, everyone in that circle, both male and female, push each other to be better versions of themselves on a daily basis. And I think that's important. And I've seen a lot of these guys in the dumps. I've seen a lot of these guys at their highest, right? And the same with me. And I think it's being able to pour into your circle where, and tell them, hey, you're like, you're screwing up right now. You're like being a freaking idiot or whatever, right? And it just, it's the good, bad, the ugly, and being truthful with them. So many people in that circle, oh yeah, everything's great, like this and that, but really building a friendship that is based on, I'll call it reality, like real hard times, and supporting them in those instances. Like an example we were talking about before, one of my best friends is Michael Hearn, and a few years difference, but again, I grew up seeing him in the magazines and different things, and it's crazy. Just, but again, it's what I talked about earlier, but building that network, right? Through business, through friendships, just leveraging different networks. And that comes from, if I didn't invest in myself with mentors and with coaches and with masterminds, I'm in the same circle, right? It's like, I'm that law of the lid. I'm stuck in there. So going through different circles, I meet, like, I don't know, Dan Fleischman's a really good friend of mine. Dan Fleischman, I call him the master connector. He's the most connected guy in the friggin' world. Like, I know it's everyone. But like, even though we live in busy times, and even like with COVID, we still plan dinners, right? So Dan Fleischman will all of a sudden text us and say, hey, Bedros, and like, I don't know, it's Bedros, Ed Milet, his wife, like all these Mike Gohern, Mona, et cetera, me and him, we'll meet somewhere for dinner. Right. And that's what we've done. And maybe we haven't all talked in a long time besides texting different things, but we come together and it's that sort of camaraderie, sharing good stories, different things. But again, I'm always on a daily basis, like probably reaching out to different people, just checking in on them. Right. And keeping that connection, but there's a lot of shared value there, right? It's a lot of them goes back to not, these guys aren't materialistic, or my inner circle is not materialistic, right? They're going to share. I think we teach one another. We push one another. A lot of my circle, I'll call it, is fitness and business related. And mm-hmm. our circle is intertwined with masterminds. So I'm in a couple different masterminds. One of them though, it's 100 people, but that 100 people has probably built me more key relationships and networking into other networks than anything in my life that I've ever invested in. People are like, holy crap, that's a lot of money. Like, why? Like, but again, it's what do you want to get? Like, I can't take the money with me. Okay. So it's what am I going to build while I'm here? And
I think they look at it, the difference is investment or expense, right?
Correct. And I think
it's an expense and they're not, and they don't know what they're going to get out of it, or, oh, this is going to take me. Or again, they're looking at it through a different lens or different perspective or mindset, you know, as you said, and they're skeptical or they're not. And then, but can you break through to the other side? Can somebody help you, you know, get there, see the value or the return in investment? And I don't mean that kind of in a cavalier manner, but as you said, time, money is an investment. What are we getting out of it? Experiences over things, you know, national connection base, anywhere you go, uplifting, you know, community. Yeah. And you see things differently.
Yeah, I think a lot of it as well is it's not just like my circle. It's not just, hey, if it's not Mike or let's say Joel Marion, right? It's like their family. So to me, all that inner circle is really like my family, but I also know their families, right? It's our kids, okay, know each other. It's not just, hey, I go to the gym with Mike O'Hearn and stuff. No, like I'm Titan's godfather, and there's no way that Mike and Mona would ever ask me to be Titan's godfather unless we really have that family bond, right? And stuff like that. So I think it's those core values, and it's how Mike saw me raising my kids and different things, because Mike didn't have kids for a long time, right? So Mike would always ask me different things. I never thought that Mike and Mona would be like parents, I'll say, right? Just because of the lifestyle. And it's a big shift. Probably Mike's, I tell this anyways, but like Mike's probably biggest shift in his life is changing, because Mike for 52 years was selfish. Mike had to focus just on Mike, right? Like it was Mike O'Hearn, bodybuilder. Well, now Mike's got a kid. Mike can't just do the same things, you know, fatherhood's different, right? Mm-hmm. Those middle of the nights, those different things. And again, so there's a lot of adoption in there. And I think that's the thing with a lot of people. Like for me, a lot of my network as well, I guess, has really grown probably in the last 6 to 8 years on the food side. People see me change, right? The nutrition aspect. And they're like, hey, what are you doing? Like, how do you do this? Whatever. And that's like a lot of the people in my circle. Like I've worked with Joel Marion before, like relationships and stuff, right? Helping him different things. But again, what value can I pour out? And I told you, learning this a long time ago, never expecting to get anything back. And I think mm-hmm. the more value that you can pour into other people and fill other people's cups, then without any expectations, all of a sudden doors open and introductions get made. And that's just like, again, you got to have that goal. You got to be able to network. And everyone here is like, hey, your network is your net worth. Well, I'm a big proponent of that. I think that's true, right? And again, lots of different great friendships, great family friendships have been built based on opening those doors.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. You have referenced this now a couple of times, your own personal transformation, obviously taking it even a step further to getting into the creation of Icon Meals, yep. going into the food business. You've referred to yourself as the lumpy phase and all those things. Was there a specific tipping point, you know, for you that started the transformation, or walk us through that? Overweight, lumpy, to bodybuilder on stage with a nutrition business.
I think for me, the tipping point was someone else, say God or whatever, put in my corner that sort of didn't allow me. It was like sort of my reset, right? I got, when I was 18 years old, before I went to college, coming off that summer, I got really, really sick with mono, real bad mono. I was in the hospital intensive care for 21 days. They almost did tracheotomy on me. Only one person could come in the room. I was like Demerol, morphine, et cetera. I came out of there after 21 days, I think down 42, 43 pounds and multiple inches off my legs. I was supposed to go play hockey at Sudbury. Ended up still going to school, but again, totally different. I went in, I think with a 38-inch waist, came out with a 33-inch waist. basically couldn't hardly stand in the shower and stuff. But that was, like I told you before, I wasn't necessarily fit, but I call it, I was skinny fat for a long time, right? I just knew that I didn't want to go back to weighing 250 pounds or whatever that I went in there. So if you want to say a blessing in disguise, it's sort of, that was, if you want to say one event, that was probably the point that was a changing point. And I wouldn't encourage anyone to have weight loss that way. But for me, it was then going to college. And I mentioned as well, I live with a semi-professional amateur bodybuilder, and I love training hard even before that. But that was when I first started learning like more about, I'll call it the bro diet, right? More or less the chicken, the rice, like about carbs and veggies and fibers and all this stuff. And that was the first little piece where, sure, I was still drinking, eating not healthy all the time and stuff. But again, my mind, I was learning, right? I was taking in all I could. That was like, I probably had like magazines with Michael Hearn and all these different guys on them, right? Greg Plitt, et cetera. And from that standpoint, it was still learning, constant learning. So if you said, hey, when did you start learning? That was like probably, it's been a long time, right? 20 to 47. And I say, fast forward that. And then I had my businesses and different things and got a little bit better shape. But it was not really, Greg, until I was 35 years old that I really had that, I'll call it epiphany moment. And that was where I still remember we were sitting in Breckenridge, Colorado. We were drinking stuff. And it was New Year's Eve. And I said, hey, I'm going to do a physique show. And they're like, oh yeah, whatever, blah, blah. And that was the last time I've drank. That was 2012. So I'll enjoy like a glass of wine and stuff. But the last time I was not feeling good was 2012. And I just, that was it. And so I started preparing for a physique show, got a coach, right? And didn't know anything. And again, there's different variations of coach, but it was like 2 hours of cardio and it was like eating chicken and this, the old bro diet, right? But again, I went on stage that first time, probably weighing 185 from down from 220, ripped to the bone, but skinny, right? Like no muscle, like, and that was the sort of, and everybody's hooked. And after that, I think, I don't know, we got to eat through whatever and went to another show, did another show, and then came in second, first, and went to NPCs in Pittsburgh. And I got my pro card in 2013, I think, in the junior nationals in Pittsburgh. And that was really when learning, like, if I even look back at the pictures then, and that was the early days of men's physique, we were on stage with like all the Steve Cook and all those guys back then. Guys today are crazy, right? Just different monsters. But from that standpoint, it was really the mindset. Hey, I knew now what I needed to do, started with my diet, focusing more on my diet, more on learning. I was like the guinea pig, right? It was a constant experiment on me, what worked and what didn't work. I think that's why important that I mentioned before, what's important, you have to learn what works for you, right? Mm-hmm. Something might work for me, but not for someone else, or someone else might have this awesome physique, but it doesn't work for you. And that's when really I got into back then at 35, was the first time ever I did a blood panel, right? I'd never taken, people say, oh, you take this and that steroids. I'd never taken anything. I live with an amateur bodybuilder who took, I had access to everything, but I have an addictive personality. And I knew if I took something that I'd want more, right? So that's why I just never touched that. I never touched anything until I was 35. And like I said, open kimono. So the only thing I even have ever taken, I take TRT, and I started that when I was like 36, whatever. Mm-hmm. I hate needles, minimum dosage for me, right? If I remember, I'm supposed to take whatever every 5 days, but again, it's probably 7-8 days to me, but I'm taking like one CC. That's it. That's the only thing I take is test sip. But again, learning my blood panel was important. I'd gone to my normal general practitioner and got this 2-page thing. I was like, yeah, you're great. Test levels, this and that. And that's what a normal GP is going to take. I say, look, people come to me and they say, hey, what do I need to do? Like, I know this, that. I say, have you ever got a full blood panel, full blood draws analysis? No, let's get you to XYZ, right? I do a lot of work with Merrick and again, get there. But a full blood panel from a hormone specialist, right, is going to be 26 to 40 pages. And you're going to have markers. You're going to want to not know stuff in there. But again, it's going to give you everything. And I say, because then you have a starting point. You know, like people say, hey, you could have be on the keto diet. Well, great. I'm not going to respond great to a keto diet based on certain things that I have, right? And how my body doesn't process fats efficiently and stuff. So again, you're going to learn a lot of stuff. And then that's for me when I could start building that foundation. It was taking things out. I can make decisions intelligently based on knowing how my body responded to certain foods, certain things. So I know it's a long-winded answer, but that's...
It is and it isn't. I mean, it does break it down very simply if you really... start with science anyway. Yeah. Before you start jumping on the bandwagon of this diet or that diet, again, whether it's keto, whether it's paleo, whether it's fasting, whether it's high carb, no carb, you know, all bacon, whatever it is, Atkins, you know, yeah, all of these other things, it's what do you know? Like, what are you going by the other dad, you know? Yeah. at school or your kid's playing the same team who's telling you what he picked up at Costco last week that he heard from somebody else, or are you going with, again, starting with science, getting your blood work done, everything else, you know, similar things, and starting to work with people that also really know what they're talking about, are going to give you good advice to follow.
I think that's key, because once you learn like all the different diets and let's say anything, right, your protein, I look at all the things that I have now as I have an arsenal full of tools. Okay. And I use fasting as a tool, right? So yep. I know my result as a tool, right? I've always, like, me and Mike are big difference here. Mike has to eat before he trains. So if I'm at Mike's going to have this huge meal, even at 4 o'clock in the morning. I've always trained, even if we're doing back, we're doing deadlifts, we're doing legs. I always train fasted. That's just me, right? I've always done that. But again, I love fasting, and I'll challenge myself. Like for a long time, I was doing every 4 weeks, 5 weeks, I do an 84 hour. And again, just a reset, but it's more for me, like I talked about, standing on stage isn't about the plastic trophy, right? For me, it's about the journey leading up to that stage and the challenges that I put myself through, because I need something that challenges me. And fasting's done that. Fasting for me has been like, it provides me more clarity. So once I'm first through the first 24 hours, I'm like zoned. It's like crazy if you've, I don't know how much you've fooled around with fasting, but, and that's the same with a lot of other things. Like, I don't know, high carb, low carb, cycling, et cetera. They're all just tools to me, right? And learning how those tools work for me.
Agree with you. I think, yes. Different ages, different stages, you know, starting in teenage bodybuilding went a certain way, you know, then got way off track with all of those goals. You bring it back around. Then it was, you know, it was paleo, which was big when I was heavy into CrossFit. And then it's this, when you're, I mean, but it's all connected. It's not, it goes beyond the nutrition, the diet that we talk about. I mean, it's the way that you look and the way that you dress and the way that you walk into Gold's in Venice and people look a certain way. You walk into a CrossFit box, they look a certain way. It's everything. All of a sudden you start to pick up the way people eat or the way that they look and the way that they lift. And again, you're back to figuring out what works for you. When all this is said and done, what works for you from the shoot, you know, I used to do the big eggs, bacon, avocado breakfast, you know, before I would go and work out. And then I went into the fasting and tried that. Which one do I prefer? Eating, not eating, eating a little bit, you know, what do I start with now? Where do I need the boost? Every little thing, whether this is a stimulant or caffeine or this or that, all these things. And again, as you said, it's a lot of trial and error, you know, over time, but it's also, can you shorten that path by hiring coaches, trainers, nutritionists, dietitians, working with people and surrounding yourself with people that actually really know?
Yeah, I want to say something about that, because I think that ties into your circle. So when we get together, my circle, right, or at the mastermind, or even if it's just like eight of us at dinner, it's each of us have, I'll call it, different areas of expertise that time collapse other expertise, right? So with Mike. When Mike, I train, it's not just, hey, we lift heavy weights. Mike's all about angles, about doing different things, right? You see this big guy sometimes using 15-pound dumbbells and stuff, but it's all about angles. Like when I first trained legs with Mike, I still remember the first time. Oh yeah, I'm in there like three wheels on, whatever, going up to four. Well, no, he's breaking you down to like a 35 on each side or 45. And it's about the form, about doing different things. But I can lift 135 pounds and I can be sore for days, more sore than I am with that 315, because I'm doing the proper form, which I know nothing about, but Mike's got 30 plus years of doing that, right?
Or yeah, he posted this awesome video, not to cut you off, that he was working with Kip, with Bill, about the different dumbbells on the shoulders, you know, and we're using 70s, but we start at 135, we go down to 70s, and we're going this speed and we're going this pacing and this angles. And you're right, you get somebody that's been doing this 20, 30 plus, you know, plus years, and you'd be remiss if you didn't listen to them on that. And I do think it's category. You said earlier, very top of the show, it's like, I've got these, you know, four F's and maybe I can learn a little something on fashion or style. It's like, I'm all about also cutting to the chase.
Yeah.
I got to figure out a personal uniform. I don't want to stare at my closet and go blind or have too many choices. So who am I going to call? I'm going to call Andrew Weitz, or I'm going to call Tanner Guzzi. And these guys are the top men stylists in the world. Come on and talk to me for a few minutes. Okay. Awesome. Because you know, you're going to save me time. You're going to save me money. We're going to figure this shit out and you're going to work with a professional.
Yeah.
And again, it wasn't always the case. Certainly for me, a little bit more ego, a little, you know, a lot more ego, more stubborn, costs you more time, costs you more money. Overall, you don't get where you want to go at the speed and pacing and cadence that you want to, want to get there. So in conclusion, I want to be totally respectful of your time. And this has been amazing. I do want to ask you, Icon, personally, where again do you want to go? Where does Icon go? How does Icon also work for the general midwife male? You know, you and I, we can geek out a little bit if we want on health, fitness, nutrition, a lot of these things, and throw a bunch of these pros names around that we really like and that we follow. The guy who's trying to become the maximized midwife male, if you will, that needs to tighten this stuff up. How does Icon work for them?
I think for us, it's all about, I'll call it making good, better, bad choices. So a lot of people right now, just it's that element I talked about of convenience, right? They wait till they're hangry and then they're going to go grab what's ever accessible. And usually that's processed food and other crap that they're putting in their body. And then they wonder why, like, their elbows are an inflammation or this or that, right? But from the standpoint, like, we offer a signature menu. The signature menu caters to, I'll call it, I don't like to use the word average, but the normal consumer, right? It's typical 4-ounce protein portion sizes, 26 to 42 grams, but they taste good. Like, our number one most popular meals are going to be like the ones that have more calories and more flavor. So you don't necessarily have to eat, I'll call it, like, on the customized meals to be specific for you. I think a lot of people out there, if they just started actually doing anything and eating healthy, and that's why, like, our boxes are our number one things, they'll see change, because so many people come in, as I talked about before, and they say, hey, I know I need to eat healthy. I know I need to do this, but I have no clue, right? It's complicated. There's so much crap out there. What do I need to do? And I think that's why we created the lean box and stuff. So it's the number one box. It's basically three different proteins, carb, and a veggie. It's basically simple, right? But it's portion controlled and allows them to get what they need to get to start growing, right? And if someone just goes from changing from eating processed food and from eating other stuff, they're going to see bloat. They're going to see inflammation. They're going to see so many different things resolve out of their body. But I had tons of people that are almost pre-diabetic and stuff just from eating healthy food, right? That have totally not had to take medicine anymore, a bunch of different things. We got tons of different stories. But I think it's from that, it's the general consumer can go on our site, can look at what, hey, they see lasagna, they see quesadillas, they recognize these names, they see bison burger, right? They see, I don't know, whatever they want, protein pancakes. But again, and just implementing those, I'll call it, those are good, better, bad choices, right? Better than they're going to make that are bad choice somewhere else. And it's about having them on site or with you in your surrounding. And if you have junk and other stuff in your surrounding, you're putting yourself, if you know you can't trust yourself, it's like going back to business. If you can't be confident and have the confidence in yourself, you can't trust yourself not to eat other crap, then don't have it around you, right?
Yeah.
And that's why we got into, like, producing other snacks and functional foods where, again, protein popcorn, I don't know, high protein coffees, like nut butters, high protein nut butters, Wagyu. So if I can have all these things that do good for my body and are clean ingredient decks, then we're allowing that consumer to make a good, better, bad choice. And I think that's key. So our market's not just fitness people, right? I think that's a preconceived notion. The average consumer for us is our main, we have, especially over COVID, it's changed from almost a male to higher, even female, which tells me more households buy and in larger quantity. And again, we have a lot of, with Icon, you can accommodate, hey, maybe it's me or you that eat one way, but my wife and kids eat another way. And they can be accommodated through all the signature meals, a la carte, family style. And again, I'm going to, like, the soccer moms and different things. I don't like using that term because it sort of paints a picture. But, like, again, let's say my wife goes and picks up Ryder from soccer and brings home a bunch of kids. Well, she can feed the kids on paper plates and she can have, I don't know, honey chipotle pizza, or she can have burger, whatever, from Icon. Or we can sit down after and have that same meal on bone china and a glass of vino, basically within 1 to 3 minutes, chef prepared 5-star meal. So it's that element of convenience and how it fits into people's busy lifestyles.
Mm-hmm. So good. And again, so important. The notion of just being able to make better choices. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Use the analogy. It's like a better one, better two. You know, you go to the eye doctor and they flip the lens around and they keep asking you better one, better two. It's like, what are we looking for? We're looking for clarity. Okay. Yeah. When we find it and we get it clear and we've got the right prescription, things start to work. And then it's amazing.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing. Like you said, clarity and consistency, right? So if people, it's not just making a choice, it's making a choice and then sticking with that. Not necessarily, it's not getting on the scale every 5 minutes to see if the scale went down, right? It's like setting proper expectations with making those choices and then carrying that out consistently. And then things happen over time. And that's typically, like you talk about, the 21 days, the 90 days to really see change in habits and different things. That's a whole nother conversation. But again, people always want to shortchange that. And, or they get into, hey, I've been eating healthy for 2 weeks. Now I need a cheat meal. Well, that's a preconceived notion of BS as well, right? Because that's been something that's thrown out there and everyone feels entitled to this or that based on they've done something. But again,
a lot of rabbit holes that we can go to in terms of the, in terms of the cheat meal, in terms of the consistency or the discipline, the word diet even versus the word lifestyle. You know, we start to get back the themes that actually are consistent. Mm-hmm. Men like yourself to come on, the men that are listening, the themes that are consistent: preparation, consistency, accountability, kind of lifestyle, and as opposed to, let's see, drastic, you know, or quick change. Aesthetics become a bonus of the lifestyle that you live.
Yeah,
I think I don't go on stage than... like you do, but you know, so I'm not specifically training, okay, to look a certain way. But I will say that I don't really pay much attention to the scale at 49 years old, be 50 in December. Yeah. I don't really pay much attention to the, I do kind of a weekly little check-in that that's kind of become,
I think, the scale. I say the scale's a liar, right? If you do, and I tell people that all the time, because it's like, if you do blood panels and you know what's going on under the hood and you're fixing and working on preventative things under the hood, at least in my mind, your goal should be longevity, right? How do you look? How do you feel? And I think the longevity is, it's something that a lot of people, I don't know, don't put enough into, because for me, my goal is long. If I have a long-term goal, right, and I'm working hard and I'm working on me, and we talked about it before, better is perfect. Well, I got a long runway then on longevity if I can focus on better is perfect along that runway, right?
That's exactly right. The sustainability, longevity, you know, those are the things that are important. That's where my adaptation is coming in terms of training, in terms of recovery, in terms of rest. You know, again, we have kids the same age. You have kids that are you have one that's younger. Mm-hmm. Yep. We talked about, again, I said 47. Anything beyond 47 is bonus time, you know, for me. Yeah. That's longevity, because my father, unfortunately, didn't make it, you know, past 47. So you start thinking about these things through a different lens, what you put on your body, what you put in your body, who you surround yourself with, the energy you need to go play with a 6-year-old, the energy I need to want to kind of deal with an 18 and a 16 year old in a different kind of way. So I think it's amazing. I thank you for sharing so much valuable insight into the way that you do things and how you've gotten yourself where you are, and also opening it up to how much help, you know, how much help, how much support, how many people you surround yourself with or make that investment in yourself and into other people and give that actually, that's what it takes.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, I think your surrounding is key, right? And if you don't have yourself in there, it is, like you said, entrepreneurship and stuff is somewhat a lonely journey, right? But again, it's, I don't know, a big thing that I've seen for a lot of is the ego part of it, right? And that's just in any and all aspects. And that even goes back to me when I was younger. Hey, baller, right? All these material things, like getting that ego out of there and humble yourself to put yourself in uncomfortable situations that allow you to grow. And once I think you do that, it's key for me. I think like it's a bunch of different steps, but I say dream big, pray hard, and long-term, right? And that's where those are sort of three things that keep you on the right trajectory. And because a lot of people, I think, don't go for that big dream, right? They're little tiny ones and then they have all these other people that are crapping on that. So it's one thing that's, if you don't put it out there, and you want to put it out there as big as you can, because anything less, you're always shortchanging yourself. So
faith, family,
food, fitness, finance.
Yeah. You touched on all of it. Todd Abrams, thank you so much for joining me today. This is a blast.
Awesome. I appreciate it, Greg. It was great to be on.
Thank you so much. How do people find you? How do they find Icon? I want to make sure we cover
that. Yeah, sure. For Icon Meals, if you guys follow us on social media, it's everything's at Icon Meals. If you're not following us on Instagram and you like food, there's a ton of food porn on there. We do a ton of different giveaways and different things, so participate on there. And then everything for me is at Todd Abrams, so Instagram, Facebook are my main two, but at TODDABRAMS.
Loved it. Anything I can do to continue to support you, I am happy to do. Keep doing what you're doing, leading by example, redefining the dad bod, how we eat, what we do, how we live, all of those areas. Guys, if you like what you have heard on the Midlife Male podcast, and I know you did today, give us the 5-star rating, leave us that good review, give Todd a follow, give Icon a follow, and we will see you and hear you next week. We're out. If you're interested in coaching and taking this conversation deeper so that you can achieve your personal and professional goals, be sure to head over to midlifemail.com and check out the Work With Me page to explore options.